Hey everyone, welcome back for another deep dive. And this time we're taking a look at domain investing from a really interesting perspective. I found this article from Adam, formerly Squad Help, and it frames domain investing in a way that I think a lot of people don't think about, like approaching your domain portfolio as a business.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a really fascinating angle to come at this from. And, you know, one of the things that stuck out to me in reading this is how many domain investors, even experienced domain investors, kind of rely on gut feeling.
Yeah.
You know, they go with what feels right. And this article really pushes back on that.
Yeah, it's so true. I know for me personally, I'm definitely guilty of this in the past where I've held on to domains simply because I love the name, even though the data may be suggested otherwise.
I think we've all been there.
Yeah. And it's a good point that they make in the article that, you know, emotional attachment doesn't pay renewal fees.
That's such a great line. That really jumped out at me, too. It's so true. You know, we have to treat these things as assets, not as pets.
Totally.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's saying that intuition should go out the window entirely, right? There's still a place for that gut feeling, especially when you're thinking about, you know, brand potential.
Oh,
like, would a real company actually use this name?
Absolutely. I think, you know, data should inform our decisions, but that judgment is still so crucial. And you bring up a great point about brand potential. Just because a domain has, you know, the trendy keywords doesn't mean it's actually going to resonate as a brand.
For sure. So data and judgment kind of working together there. But what specific data points should we be paying attention to? The article dives into some key metrics. I'm curious to get your take on these. And, you know, we can start with sell-through rate, STR. This is something I've heard thrown around a lot, but
yeah,
still a little fuzzy on how it actually works and why it matters.
Yeah. So STR is essentially a percentage of domains in your portfolio that you sell within a given period, usually a year. And it's important because it gives you a tangible measure of how effectively you're turning over your inventory. So think of it like this. If you have 1,000 domains and you sell 20 in a year, your STR is 2%.
Okay, so if my STR is 2%, does that mean I'm doing well or is that too low?
Well, so the article mentions that an STR above 2% is generally considered strong, especially if you're selling to end users at retail prices. But it's important to benchmark your STR against your own historical performance and your specific investment strategy. So, for example, if you're targeting high-value premium domains, you might have a lower STR but a higher average selling price.
Got it. Okay, that makes sense. So STR is all about sales volume, but what about the actual revenue we're generating from those sales? That's where RPD comes in, right? Revenue per domain.
Exactly. RPD takes into account both your sell-through rate and your average selling price. So it's calculated by multiplying your average selling price by your STR. For example, if your average selling price is $2,500 and your STR is 2%, your RPD would be $50. Think of it like rental income on an investment property. You need that income to cover your expenses.
Okay, so in this case, our expenses would be renewal fees, right? So if we're holding on to domains with high renewal costs, like those trendy.ai extensions, our RPD needs to be even higher to justify those fees.
Yeah, your spot-on RPD is a really good way to evaluate the efficiency of your pricing strategy and to make sure you're not just churning through domains without generating enough revenue to cover your costs. But, you know, it's important to remember that RPD alone doesn't tell the whole story. We also need to consider our acquisition costs to get a truly accurate picture of profitability.
This is starting to click for me now. So we've got STR to track sales volume, RPD to measure revenue efficiency. But what about the big picture? How do we assess the overall profitability of our domain portfolio over the long term? The article introduces this metric called expected revenue rate, ERR. What's that all about?
ERR is essentially the domain investor's version of internal rate of return, IRR, which is, you know, a common metric used in traditional investments. It gives you a long-term perspective on how your portfolio is performing, taking into account the time value of money.
Okay, but why is that so important? Why can't we just focus on generating, you know, positive cash flow from our sales?
Because as the article highlights, even if your domain portfolio is making money, it needs to outperform other investment options to be truly compelling. They compare a hypothetical domain portfolio's ERR to the S&P 500 to illustrate this point.
So we're not just competing against other domain investors, we're competing against the entire stock market. So if the S&P 500 is returning, say, 8% per year, our domain portfolio needs to exceed that to be a truly attractive investment strategy.
Exactly. And the example they provide is pretty eye-opening. They show a portfolio with a decent STR of 1.4% and an average selling price of $2,500. But the ERR is only slightly above the S&P 500, coming in at 9.73%. This emphasizes that we can't just be content with making sales. We need to focus on maximizing our long-term returns.
Okay, I'm starting to see how powerful these metrics can be. But I'm curious, how do we actually calculate ERR? It seems a bit more complex than just figuring out our STR or RPD.
Yeah, it definitely involves a bit more number crunching. But it's worth understanding. The formula for ERR takes into account your initial investment, your annual renewal costs, your projected selling prices, and your estimated sell-through rate over a given time frame, usually several years. It then calculates the rate of return that would make the present value of your future cash flows equal to your initial investment. It's similar to how you would calculate the IRR for a real estate investment or a startup venture.
So it's a way to project our potential returns over the long term and see if our domain portfolio is truly outperforming other investment options. Sounds like we need to get comfortable with spreadsheets and financial calculators if we want to master this metric.
Yeah, it definitely helps. But there are also online tools and resources that can help you calculate ERR and other key metrics for your domain portfolio.
That's good to know. I'm already starting to think about how I can apply these metrics to my own portfolio. This is shedding a whole new light on my domain investing strategy. It feels like I'm moving from a hobbyist approach to a more professional, data-driven one.
That's exactly the mindset shift this article encourages. It's about treating domain investing like a business, and that starts with understanding and leveraging these key metrics.
This has been incredibly insightful. We've covered a lot of ground in terms of the key metrics that domain investors should be tracking,
yeah.
And I'm already feeling more empowered to make data-driven decisions. But before we dive deeper into the practical applications of these metrics, let's move on to another intriguing aspect of the article, the comparison between domain investing and venture capital. So you mentioned venture capital, and I've always found that comparison intriguing. How does domain investing actually relate to venture capital? I understand they're both investments, but how are they similar in terms of strategy and mindset?
Well, it's fascinating because both domain investing and venture capital operate on this principle of asymmetric returns. You're spreading risk across multiple investments, knowing that some will fail, some will break even, and hopefully a few will deliver those massive returns that drive the overall profitability. It's about finding those hidden gems that have the potential to skyrocket in value.
So it's like investing in a portfolio of startups, hoping that one or two become unicorns to make up for the ones that don't quite make it. But portfolio management is crucial in both cases, right? How do we apply that venture capital mindset to our domain portfolio?
That's a great point. Just like a venture capitalist carefully curates their portfolio domain, investors need to be strategic about how they allocate their resources and manage their holdings. This means knowing when to double down on winners, when to cut losses on domains that aren't performing, and how to balance risk across your portfolio.
Okay, so how do we go about building that balanced portfolio?
Yeah.
Thinking about the different types of domains, like keyword domains, brandable domains, geographic domains, how do we decide which ones to invest in and how much to allocate to each category?
The article suggests a really helpful approach, segmenting your domain portfolio into buckets based on domain type. This allows you to track the performance of each category individually and identify which types of domains are generating the best returns for you.
So instead of viewing my entire portfolio as one big lump, I should break it down into categories and track their performance separately. That way I can see which types of domains are performing well and which ones are lagging behind. It seems like that granular level of analysis could really help refine my acquisition strategy.
Exactly. You can track the RPD and STR for each category to pinpoint your most profitable segments and then adjust your acquisition strategy accordingly. It's all about working smarter, not harder.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. I'm starting to see how this data-driven approach can really elevate our domain investing game. It's like we're putting on a new set of lenses to see our portfolio with more clarity and make more strategic decisions.
Absolutely. And this data-driven approach extends to pricing your domains as well.
Mm.
Instead of relying on guesswork or intuition, we can leverage data to determine the optimal price for our domains.
This is where it gets really interesting for me. I've always struggled with pricing. How do we determine the right price for a domain? It often feels like a shot in the dark, especially when dealing with unique or brandable names.
It's definitely more art than science, but there are some data-driven strategies we can use to make more informed pricing decisions. First and foremost, understand the market value of similar domains. Have there been comparable sales you can reference? What are other investors asking for similar names?
So it's like doing market research for any other product or service. We need to understand the competitive landscape and see what the market is willing to pay for similar assets.
Exactly. Just like you wouldn't price a house without looking at comparable properties in the neighborhood, you shouldn't price a domain without researching its market value. Tools like NameBio can be incredibly helpful for researching past sales data and getting a sense of the fair market value for different types of domains.
That's a great tip. I've used NameBio in the past, but I haven't been as systematic about incorporating that data into my pricing strategy. It seems like a crucial step to take before even listing a domain for sale.
Absolutely, it's essential to have that data foundation. But beyond market value, another key factor to consider is your target buyer. Are you aiming for end users who will develop the domain into a website or business, or are you looking to sell to another domain investor?
That's a great point. End users might be willing to pay a premium if they see the domain as a perfect fit for their brand, whereas investors are more focused on potential resale value and return on investment. So understanding our target buyer can help us tailor our pricing strategy accordingly.
Exactly. You might also consider factors like the domain's length memorability and the overall strength of the keywords it contains. A shorter, catchier domain with strong keywords might command a higher price than a longer, more generic one.
It sounds like pricing involves a delicate balance of quantitative and qualitative factors. We're looking at market data, target buyer, and the inherent qualities of the domain itself to arrive at a price that makes sense.
Precisely. Data provides a solid foundation, but you also need to apply your judgment and knowledge of the domain market to make those final pricing decisions.
And it's important to remember that pricing isn't static, right? We might need to adjust our asking prices over time based on market trends, the performance of our portfolio, and even just our own evolving understanding of the domain's value.
Absolutely. The domain market is constantly evolving, just like any other market. Staying informed about current trends and being willing to adapt your pricing strategy is key for long-term success.
This has been incredibly enlightening. I feel like I'm starting to see the bigger picture of domain investing moving beyond just finding good names to managing a portfolio strategically. I'm curious to hear more about these different types of domains that the article mentions, like made-up domains, keyword domains, and one-word domains. Can you walk us through those categories and the strategies for investing in each?
Certainly, let's start with made-up domains. These are often short, catchy, and brandable, like Google or Spotify. They were made-up words that became household names. They offer a lot of flexibility and creative potential, but they can also be more challenging to value since there's no inherent meaning attached to them.
Those are great examples. It seems like made-up domains have the potential to become incredibly valuable if they catch on, but they also require a certain level of vision and creativity to identify those hidden gems that might resonate with consumers. It's almost like predicting the next cultural phenomenon.
Exactly. Then we have keyword domains, which, as the name suggests, contain high-value keywords related to specific industries or niches. Think of domains like cryptotrading.com or organicfooddelivery.com. These domains often have clear SEO benefits and can be easier to value since their relevance is more readily apparent.
Keyword domains definitely seem like a more straightforward approach, especially for those who are new to domain investing. You can see the potential value right away because the domain clearly targets a specific market or industry. But I imagine competition can be fierce for those highly sought-after keywords.
Absolutely. And we have one-word domains, which are those premium dictionary words that can command top dollar, like cars.com or insurance.com. They're highly brandable and memorable, but they're often already owned and can be extremely expensive to acquire.
Those are definitely the blue chip stocks of the domain world. It's fascinating to consider how the value of a single word can fluctuate based on market trends and technological advancements. A word that seemed mundane a few years ago could suddenly become incredibly valuable as a new technology emerges.
That's a great observation. And speaking of market trends and technological advancements, we also have geographic domains, which are becoming increasingly valuable as businesses target local markets. Think of domains like MiamiRealEstate.com or LondonHotels.com.
Those make a lot of sense. Geographic domains offer a strong sense of local relevance and can attract highly targeted traffic, especially as more and more consumers search for products and services within their specific geographic area.
Exactly. And finally, we have domains with alternative TLDs, those extensions beyond the traditional .com. We're seeing more and more businesses embrace alternative TLDs like .io, .ai, and even country-specific extensions. These can offer a fresh, modern feel and can be more affordable than premium .com domains.
It's fascinating to see how the domain landscape is evolving. With so many different types of domains to choose from, it's crucial to have a clear strategy and understand the pros and cons of each category. Do you have any advice on how to approach this decision-making process?
The best approach is to align your domain type selection with your investment goals, risk tolerance, and overall market understanding. If you're comfortable with higher risk and have a long-term outlook, brandable domains might be a good fit. If you prefer more immediate returns and lower risk keyword domains could be a better option.
And that's where the importance of data comes in again. By tracking the performance of different domain types in our portfolio, we can identify the categories that are generating the best returns for us and refine our acquisition strategy accordingly. It's about letting the data guide our decisions, not just chasing the latest trends.
Exactly. It's about being strategic and intentional with your domain investments, just like you would with any other business venture.
This has been incredibly insightful. I feel like we've just scratched the surface of this fascinating world, and I'm eager to explore more. But before we wrap up this deep dive, I want to circle back to one of the core themes we touched upon earlier, the idea of treating domain investing like a business. What does that look like in practice?
It starts with a shift in mindset. Instead of viewing domain investing as a passive hobby, approach it as a strategic endeavor. Develop a business plan, set clear goals, and create a system for tracking your progress.
So just like starting any other business, we need a roadmap, a plan of action to guide our decisions and keep us on track.
Precisely define your target market research, your competition, and identify your unique selling proposition. What sets you apart from other domain investors? Do you specialize in a particular niche? Do you have a proven track record of identifying undervalued domains? Do you have a specific pricing strategy?
So it's about having a clear understanding of your strengths and weaknesses, just like any other business. But beyond having a plan, what are some of the day-to-day practices that set successful domain investors apart? What do they do differently?
Successful investors are constantly learning and refining their skills. They stay informed about industry trends, network with other investors, and invest in tools and resources that help them make better decisions.
So it's an ongoing process of education and self-improvement. It's not a set-it-and-forget-it type of investment. We need to stay engaged and adaptable to thrive in this dynamic market.
Exactly. And don't underestimate the importance of networking. Building relationships with other investors, brokers, and even end users can open doors to new opportunities and provide valuable insights into the market.
It's like building a support system, a network of people who can share their knowledge and experience. And I imagine attending industry conferences and joining online forums can be incredibly valuable for staying connected and informed.
Absolutely. Surround yourself with people who share your passion for domain investing and who can help you grow your business. You can learn from their successes and their mistakes.
This has been a truly enlightening conversation. We've delved into the strategic side of domain investing, exploring the importance of data-driven decisions, the art of pricing, and the diverse landscape of domain types. But before we conclude this deep dive, I want to leave our listeners with one final thought. We've talked a lot about the analytical aspects, but let's not forget the human element. Domain names are more than just digital assets. They represent ideas, brands, and the potential to connect with audiences in meaningful ways. They hold the power to shape the online world and influence how people interact with information, products, and services.
That's a beautiful way to put it. At the end of the day, domain investing is about more than just making money. It's about being a part of the digital world's evolution, shaping the online landscape, and helping businesses and individuals find their place in the vast expanse of the internet.
I love that perspective. It reminds us that domain names have real-world implications connecting people with ideas, products, and services. It's not just about numbers on a spreadsheet. It's about facilitating connections and contributing to the growth of the digital ecosystem.
Exactly. And as we've discussed throughout this deep dive, data is our compass guiding us through the complexities of the domain market.
It's been fascinating to see how these metrics like STR, RPD, and ERR can provide such valuable insights into our portfolio performance and help us make more strategic decisions. But I'm also curious to hear your thoughts on intuition and creativity. How do those qualities play a role in successful domain investing?
Intuition and creativity are essential, especially when it comes to identifying those hidden gems, those domains that others might overlook. It's that spark of insight that leads you to a domain before it becomes the next big thing.
So it's about recognizing the potential in a name that others might not see. It's almost like having a sixth sense for what will resonate with consumers in the future.
Exactly. It's about spotting trends before they become mainstream, understanding consumer behavior, and even anticipating how technological advancements might shape the demand for certain types of domains.
That's a fascinating skill set. It sounds like successful domain investors need to be part data analyst, part trend forecaster, and part creative visionary. It's a unique blend of left brain and right brain thinking.
I couldn't agree more. It's that combination of data-driven analysis and intuitive insight that can lead to truly remarkable outcomes in the domain investing world.
This has been an incredible journey. We've covered a lot of ground exploring data-driven strategies, portfolio management techniques, pricing strategies, and even the philosophical side of demand investing. I feel like I've gained a whole new perspective on this fascinating field.
It's been a pleasure sharing these insights with you. I hope you feel empowered to approach your domain portfolio with a renewed sense of purpose and strategy.
Absolutely. I'm already thinking about how I can apply these concepts to my own portfolio and start making more informed decisions.
And remember, the world of domain investing is constantly evolving. Stay curious, stay informed, and never stop learning. There's always something new to discover, a new trend to analyze, a new opportunity to uncover.
Well said. And on that inspiring note, we'll wrap up this deep dive into the world of domain investing. We hope you've enjoyed the journey and feel equipped to navigate this dynamic market with confidence and a strategic mindset.
Happy investing, everyone.